We have Governor Tony Evers joining us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Items on the table for this discussion include digging into his $91 billion budget proposal, the push to reopen schools by incentivizing in-person learning, and we start with how vaccine rollout is going in our state. What kind of help are you seeking from state government? What are your priorities for elected officials? What do you want the governor to know? It's 800-642-1234. Governor Tony Evers, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, Kate, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Well, this week we saw the state expand eligibility for COVID vaccines to teachers, to childcare workers, others, but supply remains below demand. Is our state getting its fair share of vaccines from the federal government?
Well, certainly. I mean, the federal government has a limited supply now, although President Biden talked yesterday about how it's going to expand, but we get the share that the percentage of our population as compared to the nation's population. So it's pretty cut and dried. It's a percentage, and I think we're someplace between 1.5 and 2% of the nation's population. And that's the amount we get from the vaccines that we get from Washington, D.C. The good news is that over the last several weeks and months, actually, it's been slowly increasing the number of vaccines that we get. And so we're actually, I think we have 1.5 million shots in people's arms as of yesterday or the day before. So we're headed in the right direction. We continue to lead the Midwest in the percentage of shots per capita, and we hope to continue to be in that position.
What is your administration doing to make it easier, more transparent for eligible people to receive vaccines when they're eligible?
Well, I recognize the difficulty in doing that. But first of all, people have to be patient. We obviously can't do millions of shots every day. And also, it's we rely on our partners at the local level, whether it's public health organizations or our healthcare providers or hospitals or pharmacies. The way we're doing it in Wisconsin is the same way it's doing in most other states, too, is that we want to get it to as many providers and vaccinators as possible so that we can reach all people. And not everybody has health insurance. Not everybody has health insurance with a large hospital organization. And so we want to make sure we get it to the people of the state of Wisconsin. And we just may have to make sure that we reach out to people and make sure that they know when their time is ripe to get the shot.
Do you have any indication, any forecast when enough vaccines will be given so that Wisconsin can reach herd immunity?
Well, the president said yesterday that he expects that by the end of May, every adult in the United States of America would have at least one shot, and of course for at least two-thirds of the types of vaccines we have, you need two shots. So it's likely to be, you know, my estimation, sometime in the summer where we can make sure that everybody has the two. But it is ramping up quickly. I mean, yesterday the president signed got a deal with Merck Pharmaceuticals and Johnson & Johnson to come together to ramp up Johnson & Johnson vaccines. And the ones from Pfizer and Moderna are also getting more used to this cadence, and they are producing more at the same time. So I see light at the end of the tunnel as far as getting people vaccinated. We have to, obviously, there's lots of people in the state and the country that are a little hesitant about vaccines. We're going to have to convince them to be active here and also get shots. But at the end of the day, we'll be getting there by summer. It seems that way. You know, things will get bumpy. I mean, there's no way to predict when an assembly line will break down or something like that will cause us to, or, you know, we may have a blizzard in the middle of March or April and shut this state down for a couple of days. So we have to be patient. We have to continue to be patient, but we are getting there. We're going to be increasing the numbers of shots just with the Johnson & Johnson shots. It's going to add 4 million to the group that's going to be distributed across the country. So I feel confident, and people need to continue to be connected with their local physicians or local public health to find the right place. In addition, the state will be doing having a website where people will be able to determine where's the best place for them to get the vaccine.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about COVID state politics with Governor Tony Evers, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Amanda is with us from Brown County. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi. So I don't necessarily have a question. I just wanted to call to say thank you. I moved up to Brown County from Milwaukee at the beginning of the pandemic. And I do social work with families and children, and I'm seeing the effects of COVID, and not just death, but like the lingering side effects. And I just want to thank you for backing science and looking out for us. And I hope that you hear that enough from our community. Thank you.
And thanks, Amanda. I just have to appreciate that following the science, frankly, is important and easy. I mean, the scientists have been pretty clear all the way along. And that's the other thing I was going to mention when we talked about the good news around the vaccine going forward is that in the meantime, until this virus is actually surrounded by people that have had vaccines, we need to make sure that we're still doing the things around social distancing and wearing a mask. The last thing we want to do is go backwards on this virus, especially when we see light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, on that issue, Texas and Mississippi lifting mask mandates, mask wearing has become a deeply politicized issue here. On your current order requiring masks, it's set to expire March 20th. What happens?
Well, we continue to we will, regardless of what happens, we will continue to make sure that people, you know, encouraging people to wear a mask. If we need to have another order around masks, we will do that. I think it's really important, and with the new variants out there, wearing a mask is critically important. And so if we need to re-up it, we will. It is in front of the Supreme Court now, that order, and my ability to do that. So that may change, but it is clear. In fact, I was just talking to a head of one of our largest businesses in the state of Wisconsin a few days ago about something else. And then closing, the CEO told me, he said, "I just have to tell you that you staying strong on this issue of wearing a mask is important. People in leadership have to understand that we have to set standards and expectations, and that's a good one." And he thanked me for doing that. So whether you're a titan in our business arena or somebody that's just regular folks like me, you have to understand that this isn't a punishment. This is something that saves lives.
Let's bring in Lori now in River Falls with a question and comment. Lori, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I am just wondering what happened to those people with underlying conditions. I am actually quite frustrated that they haven't been called up yet for their vaccination.
And thanks, Lori, for the question. The people with underlying conditions, first of all, many of them that are 65 and up have received vaccinations, but there are people with severe underlying conditions that are young people in their 20s and up. So that they will be prioritized. They're in the present group of people with teachers and childcare workers. And once we get those people done, then we will be in the position to provide those shots. And The good news is that most of those folks have caretakers right now that that we'll be able to make sure, and we know who they are, who most of those people are, because they're usually part of some sort of government program, and we will we'll have access to who they are and get those shots in their arms in the very near future.
Lori, thank you. Stan now in De Pere with a question about schools as we move on to the topic of education. Stan, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I also live in Brown County, and you know, we've got some school districts almost never closed and other school districts remain closed. And I wonder what the governor's policy is with that. I see the CDC is recommending that we should probably be opening the schools. So I'll just hang up and listen to your comments.
Okay, thanks, Stan. And my position all along has been that local school districts need to weigh the pros and cons of being open or not open or in hybrid or whichever stage they're in. That they have to make that decision, because the ability to mitigate is at the core of whether schools are open or not. And as a result of that, if you're a smaller school district and with small class sizes already, and the rooms are big enough, and the science says that transmission among children or from children to adults is minimal. And so those school districts that had the ability to mitigate right off the bat, they were open, and those that weren't in that position remain closed or hybrid. And everybody wants to be back in school. There isn't a teacher or principal or a parent, frankly, that doesn't want to get back to school. Good news is everybody is headed in that direction now. In some of our larger districts, I anticipate that they will be in some sort of in-person learning this month. We will be getting to the teachers and others that work in the schools this month, and it's already started in many places.
For vaccinations.
For vaccinations, yeah. That's correct. And so we'll get shots in people's arms, but the CDC guidance is that that isn't a prerequisite to opening schools. It is an important part of making sure that people are safe. But we're getting there. I talk to school people all the time. They're very concerned about learning, and they want to get people back in the classroom as soon as possible.
Governor Tony Evers is with us as we look at COVID in our state and moving ahead as to how the state looks forward in its next budget. Can the state afford these kinds of increases around two-thirds funding for public schools? Is it risky or prudent to nearly drain our state's rainy day fund for the next biennial budget? Topics that we'll explore, and still time to talk with you back in a minute with Governor Evers here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Governor Tony Evers as we discuss the pressing issues for Wisconsin in these unprecedented times. We have been talking about education, and your two-year state budget, Governor, you're proposing a $1.6 billion hike in state aid for K-12 schools. Republicans say that amount is too much. And this week, we talked with Representative Mark Bourne, co-chair of the legislature's budget writing committee.
This amount is way too high. I think you could say that about the budget in general. The budget spends way too much. It taxes way too much. And so we'll have to bring it down to a more realistic investment, living within the state's means.
So living within the state's means, and Bourne said your budget is built on, quote, sand. What is your response?
Well, my response is a typical response from the other side. And people have to know that there's lots of huffing and puffing going on, as it is with all budgets and all proposals. The fact of the matter is, as it relates to schools, Speaker Voss a couple years ago had one of his famous blue ribbon commissions, and this one was on education. And they came back with a recommendation, and this was a group of bipartisan group, people from the community, people from schools, saying two-thirds funding we have to have that. Well, by golly, this is two-thirds funding. So either that Blue Ribbon Commission was a waste of time, or we really do believe in two-thirds funding. We can do two-thirds funding if the legislature wants it. We've clearly within our budget we're paying for everything that we're putting forward, and in some cases with building projects and other long-term projects, obviously some of that money is borrowed. But for the most part, the school proposal is paid for, period. And if they want to do two-thirds funding, they can. And there's already bipartisan support for it.
Let's bring in Tom in Burlington with a question about teachers. Tom, go ahead.
I'd like to know, how can we get more money into teachers' paychecks? And if the normal taxpayer in Wisconsin knows that something is for a good purpose, I don't think there are many people, or we have to find out, how many people are we willing to pay a little extra more in their taxes to make it happen? And do we need some kind of a bipartisan survey to go out? And by the way, Mr. Voss ran on this ad talking about socialism, and when he's going to be getting his depreciation allowance for his buildings, I'm sure he's not.
Okay, Tom, I'm going to just stop there and allow the governor to respond to how teachers are paid and what you see there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's been... The important thing for people to realize is school districts have great support from me and from local taxpayers, especially local taxpayers. As your listeners know, Kate, that we've had numerous across our state, numerous referenda, and a couple billion dollars, I think, over the last couple of years. And some of those referenda were specifically for teacher wages. And so the support is there, and I know school board members know this too, that teachers are doing heroic work during this time, and you know, hopefully we'll continue to make teacher pay a priority. Of course, it's always pitted against other things that have to happen within school districts, such as buildings and making sure that the right instructional materials are in place and so on. But I am a supporter of making sure that teachers are paid fairly, and I'll continue to support that. And local school districts are already doing that and it's showing it through referenda that people are passing on record numbers.
Well, on the issue of pay, your budget would steadily raise the state's minimum wage to $10.15 an hour by 2024 and create a task force to look at the $15 an hour proposal. Congress, of course, debating that as well. Would you support taking that step to raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour?
Of course, $15 an hour is a minimum, obviously, and it's very difficult to have a family and do well at $15 an hour. That's just barely enough to scrape by at best. In fact, the United Way does a study every 2 years, and they find that there's 60% of the people in the state of Wisconsin that are struggling financially. You know, they're making more than the minimum wage, but if you have a family of four and you can barely keep the lights on and food on the table, so $15 an hour is just a minimum. I understand small businesses might have difficulties with that, and that's because they have limited resources to pay people more. And that's why I try to do it in a more moderated way. But I do support $15 an hour. I think that's a bare minimum.
We're discussing state politics policy with Governor Tony Evers on the line. Jeff is with us from Superior. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Good morning, Governor. I think you'll agree that the science says boys have two X chromosome or an XY chromosome and girls have an XX chromosome. So how do you support the idea that transgender athletes can compete in women's sports?
Well, you're right. That is the case that the chromosomes are distributed that way, but that doesn't necessarily determine whether someone is transgender or any LGBTQ category. So what I support is making sure that all kids all people in Wisconsin are treated fairly and equally, and singling out one group of people such as transgender and saying you can't do this and you have to do this, I think it's ridiculous. We have to be fair to everybody, and I think that's the best way to be fair, is to treat people as they determine that they are their gender determination.
On the issue of treating people fairly, I want to look closer at education. Our national test results show a huge achievement gap between Black and white students. The state superintendent, Carolyn Stanford Taylor, has called this issue a crisis. How would your budget address these achievement gaps?
Well, the budget is based on equalized aid, and in that case, the budget is set up automatically to provide more money to school districts that have less ability to pay through their property taxes, and that does advantage school districts. In addition, we continue to provide more resources to our populations in the state, whether it's through not just our schools, but also our early childhood programming and so on, to those communities that struggle financially, and Black and brown and indigenous populations. So it's not just school, it's child care. It's part of our school funding formula, and also in other areas, whether it's housing, transportation, health care, all those things work together. If I've learned anything as governor, is that yes, education is important, but if your parents are unable to find jobs that pay to the level that's important, that you can put food on the table, that's a problem.
Interrelated. Governor, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us. That is Tony Evers, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.